Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to actually the last official session of the CHW section during this year's annual meeting. My name is Lisa Renee Holderby Fox, and I am the outgoing section chair for the CHW section. And I just want to say it's been a pleasure to serve in that capacity. So this morning, this is the second session, actually. We had so many wonderful, wonderful abstracts for policy and systems change that we were able to break it up into two different sessions. So this is actually the second session of policy and system change to support CHWs. We have three wonderful, wonderful speakers, and I'll introduce all three speakers, and I will ask people to hold their questions until after all three presentations, and that way we can have some robust, I'm hoping, discussion in the last few minutes of the session. I would also like to ask folks, if you are not a member of the CHW section, to please consider becoming a member of the CHW section. You can do that either online, or you can quickly, actually by the time we finish you may not be able to do that anymore, but over at the Convention Center, APHA had a membership booth set up. So please again consider joining the section if you're not already a member. So our first presenter this morning is Sue Swider, and she's an associate professor in the Department of Community Systems and Mental Health Nursing at Rush University in Chicago. She's currently specialty coordinator for the Advanced Public Health Nursing Graduate Program, a distance learning program which attracts public health nurses from across the nation to study at Rush. And I also would like to say that Sue has been a longtime supporter of CHWs and has many publications relative to the practice of CHWs. Our next presenter will be Sean Bruna Lewis, and he's a PhD candidate. He's a medical anthropology doctoral candidate in the Department of Anthropology. Wow, you can tell it's been a long few days for me. I'm sorry. At the University of New Mexico. He holds a BA in anthropology and Latin American studies and an MA in social science with a focus on federal Indian law from the University of Chicago, and an MA in anthropology from the University of New Mexico. His dissertation, Sowing the Seeds for the Future to Honor Tenga History and Tradition, Diabetes Prevention Practices at Isleta del Sur Pueblo, is a university-based participatory research study for type 2 diabetes prevention practices at a federally recognized tribe. In addition to his doctoral research, Sean is a research scientist and ethnographer at the National Institutes of Health funded project Corazón por la Vida, Comparative Effectiveness Research for Eliminating Disparities, a large interdisciplinary study which is examining the cost effectiveness of a promotora, community health worker-led hypertension management program for Latinos in rural New Mexico. And our last presenter this morning is from my home state of Massachusetts. We've got Laura Gomez, and she has a background in social sciences and the provision, of public services, including social determinants of health. Since she joined the Prevention and Access to Care and Treatment PACT project in 2008, she's headed the research team, completing two NIH grants, looking at the transition of patients through PACT's HIV directly observed therapy program and in the innovation of CHW and patient curricula from a community-based participatory perspective, as well as analysis on the effectiveness and cost benefit of the HIV program presented at a scientific and professional forums. Currently, she's leading the monitoring and evaluation efforts at PACT, working with the programmatic teams in defining logic models, indicators, and other metrics to assess the health of interventions and evaluate their impact. So if we could welcome the three speakers this morning.
Thanks. And I am number one, and thank you all of you for being here at the very almost last of, I can always see by the suitcases in the back, you know, that people are getting ready to head out the door. And I'm going to be really, really, really big picture here for a while, and then my colleagues can go up or down. Well, I don't know if they can go up, but what I'm going to talk about is work I've been doing, and it's not entirely finished, and I had hoped it would be more finished, but it's work I've been doing for the last year and a half after my mentor, Beverly McElmurray from University of Illinois, passed away. And the reason that I started this work was actually a symposium is a tribute to her from the Midwest Nursing Research Society, and we were kind of looking big picture at some of her impact, and so that kind of caused me at this young age to look back at my career and where I got into working with community health workers and what that meant and some questions that arose out of that work in the 80s and that have kind of tracked me all the way through. And so what I've done here, oh, I have to say the usual APHA, I have no financial relationships to disclose. Everybody says I have no relationships. I do have relationships. I just don't have any financial relationships. So I want to, if bear your indulgence, I want to talk a little bit about how I got into working with community health workers and some of the concepts behind it, and then where it led me to what I will talk about today, which is this kind of conceptual literature review to look at how the idea of a community health worker has evolved over time, at least as reflected in the literature. So I started in the 80s doing some work in feminist methodology, feminist research methodology. And this is just a couple of the big picture pieces around that. You know, one of the things that was important was that we looked at the context of women's lives, that you couldn't look at their health outside of everything else that's going on with them. So social determinants is what it ends up being. I was very young and fairly newly educated nurse at that time, and so this was all pretty revelationary for me. We also looked a lot at the idea of empowerment and what did empowerment mean, and how could you facilitate that? Was it something people had to do on their own? What could you do to help women in particular raise their voice as participants in the healthcare system? And that involved empowerment and kind of collaboration back and forth. And then I was studying public health at the same time, so all the social determinants and then a whole idea around social justice, around equality, and around how people deserve to be treated both inside and outside of the healthcare system. And then I did a lot of nursing ethics work. You can see I was a little scattered, but I am going to tell you that at some point this comes together conceptually. But I did a lot of nursing ethics work, and a lot of the ethics work we did in the 80s was around the idea for nurses and for patients of voice and autonomy, of bringing the patient to, and the ethical decision-making, bringing the patient really seriously into ethical decision-making. And again, social justice. And I want to say something briefly about Sally Gadow and that last piece on there. She did some really nice work in the 80s around ethical decision making for healthcare providers and talked about the traditional model in healthcare was very paternalistic. Okay, we're going to tell you what you need to do. And then there was kind of a new and up and coming model that was kind of what she called consumeristic, which was, oh no, we're not going to tell you what to do, but here's all the choices arrayed in front of you. And what she argued is that was equally daunting for patients who didn't understand those choices. And she argued for a model that she called existential advocacy, which was really working with people to figure out where their values, you know, what their healthcare situation was and where their values led them to in terms of decision making. And so you could have two people with very similar health conditions end up with very different decisions based on the context of their lives. So all of this kind of culminated for me in some work around the international model of primary health care. And I won't go through this slide. This is kind of a really brief summary of what primary health care is out of WHO and Alma-Ata. But the two pieces that really resonated was that you had to look at people's health and what impacted their health big picture. Those social determinants, all of those social conditions and environmental conditions, and that you had to work with them at all times. That it was participation, it was collaboration, it was whatever it took, but health wasn't going to improve unless people were involved in making the decisions that impacted their health. So, okay, what are all the common themes in there? And I obviously had highlighted them in red so that in case they weren't obvious. But it was the idea of social determinants of health. It was the idea of empowerment and autonomy and voice, collaboration, social justice, advocacy, and big picture populations and communities. So out of those ideas, which were all related to me, but again, being educated out of the traditional healthcare system were all pretty revelationary to me at that point in my career, I was involved in a variety of projects that brought those together. So the first one was a project that trained teenagers as community health advocates. We called them community health advocates at that point. And this was in 1983 or 84, and it was with very early work training funds, CETA funds, with the idea that these teens were supposed to go off and get careers. However, this was 4 months worth of CETA funds, so let me tell you, you don't start a whole project, pick much, do training, and then have people career ready at the end of that point in time. But what I learned from it, and I was a graduate student at this point, what came out of it for me was how much more we were learning from those teens about their realities and about their versions of health than anything we were sharing back with them. Now, they might say it was reciprocal because they were learning a lot of things. We had some amazing health beliefs that came out of the discussion. But what we as the health providers were getting out of it was phenomenal. It was life-changing in terms of the way you viewed healthcare and your role. And I talked about the ethics work, and then the larger project, the Primary Healthcare and Urban Communities Project, came out of what we learned from the teens, and we said, this is life-changing. We really want to do something in communities to work with people, and community health workers were looked at as kind of the representatives of the communities we went into and negotiated with, and we got some money from a local foundation to do a 5 to 7 year project that was called Primary Healthcare and Urban Communities, and it was designed to take the WHO model and implement it in the U.S. in a way that we hadn't seen it been done before. So we had two communities, teams of community health workers and nurses working together, doing assessments, and then based on the information they got, going out and working with their neighbors at whatever problems were identified to try to improve health in that community. Was a wonderful model. It was probably the best job I ever had or will ever have. Learned much more than I felt that I gave in it. We had a variety of aspects of it, and we got a lot of funders involved. Kellogg Foundation was a funder. We were able to eventually send our community health workers to other countries to work with colleagues there and see how this work was being done elsewhere. So very important. Ended up not terribly great in terms of evaluation, because when you don't kind of know where you're going when you start, it's really hard to say when you got there. So we had a lot of process measures in all of this. We ended up creating a leadership academy that existed for a long time and an AmeriCorps project out of it that exists to this day. So again, and I won't belabor this, but key concepts were kind of the ones I have here. We did some research on training results, on outreach, how effective the workers were at getting out and getting their neighbors in, but really not so much at whether we were able to make obvious quantitative changes in health in the community, because we were operating on community-based problem definitions, so it was an ever-moving target. And then currently, I've been fortunate enough to work with two of my Rush colleagues that are here, Steve Rothschild, who just presented on MATCH, his study MATCH that I've been able to work on, and Molly Martin on Lakota, and we are actually looking now at doing some promotora visit analysis based on the MATCH work. So that's kind of like more than you wanted to know about my life for the last 30 years. But the questions for community health workers that have kind of maintained and developed over time has been this whole idea, are they effective and in what roles? Is it the workers or is it the interventions? What about cost? And then the questions we're looking at with the promotora analysis we hope to look at more seriously is what characteristics are necessary or enhance this effectiveness? And my question is, how the heck does all this relate to community empowerment, which is where I started from? So that as we've moved the movement towards support and funding and more specificity on roles and fitting into the healthcare system and looking at effectiveness, where does that relate to the whole idea of empowerment that we started with that I started with? So the purpose of the literature review that I now have like 3 minutes to talk to you about was to really look for the past 50 years at the literature and see what the literature said about the idea of empowerment. And then I also asked some questions about what did those same articles say about the role, the theories behind the role, how the role should be sustained, and how you would measure any effectiveness. So I did an integrated lit review for the last 50 years, and I was looking. I did one a few years back that was specifically focused on effectiveness and places where it had been measured. This was the total opposite. I was really looking big picture and conceptually. Some of the articles I've reviewed do have data in them, but that's not a prerequisite, and many of them don't. I was really looking for the conversation, the theory, the ideas behind it. Thousands and thousands of articles came out in the electronic search, but 66 really seemed to meet my criteria, thank God. And you can see how they evolved over time, with the decade of the 90s being the really big place for lots of publication. But I mean, it's a dramatic increase from the 80s, where I kind of started and nobody was at least publishing about this, to where we're at now. So let me just talk about this, and I say preliminary results because I'm still looking at some of it, and I have some graduate students that are going to help me and kind of double-check my work so that we can enhance, you know, the validity and the reliability of what I've done. But when you first looked at these articles for, what's the reason that we're looking at community health workers? What's the problem they're supposed to address? You can see it ran across a variety of things, starting with looking at social determinants of health, which maintained through the 70s, which has maintained actually all the way across. But you can see by the time you get to the 90s, you're starting to look at articles talking about the workers as enhancing medical compliance. We have these patients out here who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and these workers will help us get them, I'm being facetious, I guess, these people will help us get them to do the things that we know in the healthcare system that they should be doing. And there was also a big component of looking at access to care. Community health workers are great at helping us get in, or are the answer for helping us increase access to care for disadvantaged populations. So who were these populations that they, oh, I'm sorry, the roles first. What were the roles that these articles talked about? Again, specific activities means that the article just kind of said, workers can go door to door and knock and bring people into the clinic, or workers can, you know, call people up and remind them about their appointments. So very specific activities. And that was where the first article started in the 60s. And then in the 70s, and it maintains through the rest of the decades, you see a lot of Israel's definition of natural helper. So we need to be looking for people who are already filling this role in their community, their neighbors already reach out to them, and we need to capitalize on that natural helper piece. Discussion in the 80s about cultural broker. We're talking about cultural differences between the healthcare system and name your culture, and these people can function very effectively at brokering that, and at community health workers as a bridge to the healthcare system. We're having problems getting people in or having them understand, and so these workers can serve as a bridge. A little bit of a discussion in the 80s and 90s, and then in the last decade, about empowerment, actually decreasing a little bit, about generic empowerment, and some of that discussion was about empowerment of the workers themselves, less about the communities that they worked in. Target populations, you might have guessed, they were the articles talk about workers working in, with the underserved, with poverty populations, with specific populations at risk of disease that we know are at high risk, with racial and ethnic minority populations, specifically in the 90s, you can see that was a big theme. Sometimes the articles talked about multiple populations, saying, you know what, this is a universal role, it depends on your community. You decide who the population is that's hardest to reach, and then it can vary over time. Some talking about actually having workers work with community activists to get them thinking about healthcare, and then a variety of places, or a variety of articles where they didn't specify target populations. Theories. This was one of my key questions. What were the underlying theories? And go right down to the bottom, which you can barely see, where it says not specified. Quite often, there was no underlying theory specified. There were a lot of assumptions. And the assumptions are the ones that you would mostly guess. They were assumptions about the difference between certain underserved populations and the official healthcare system, and the fact that if you get someone who looks like the population you're trying to reach, or who talks their language, or who lives in their area, that they're going to be more effective at reaching them, but not tied to a specific theory. When they did talk about theories, the natural helper piece was large. There was some discussion of empowerment theory, usually based on Paulo Freire and adult education and empowerment. Ecological framework in this decade, some discussions with Hatch and Eng's CHW model. What am I missing? Social networking theory. Those were kind of the big pieces of theory. So again, all over the board. Some commonality in terms of assumptions, but really testing out a variety of different theories. What did these articles say about sustainability? Well, a lot of them, and again, go to the bottom, didn't even talk about it, didn't even mention how the role would be sustained. But interestingly enough, there was discussions, particularly in the 80s and 90s, about we need to document effectiveness so that these people, this role can be sustained. We need policies that will sustain the role. a variety of articles talking about we need a good fit with the community. This role will sustain if the community sees them as people who represent them, and then they will figure out some way to keep it going. Job stability, external support, and then a discussion in the 90s that I haven't seen picked up again, which was it doesn't matter if a program sustains. What matters is if you've left skills behind in a community, because then it sustains forever whether the workers are still there in any way, shape, or form or not. And then last, the discussion of effectiveness. A lot of it, you can see across the top line there, a lot of it was process measures, the very measures I told you that we did in Chicago in the 80s and 90s. How many people did they reach? How many referrals did they make? Those kinds of process-oriented measures. Some increasingly, as you went on through the 70s and 80s, and then now into disease-specific outcomes, which I think is a lot of what we just talked about in the last presentation, the last session. And then some where they didn't discuss it at all and it was just anecdotal. Some pieces that talked about outcomes for the community health workers themselves rather than the target population. So what do I want to say about this as a whole? And again, I'm still kind of working on some of it because it's been much more elaborate to really pull out theory pieces than I anticipated. So I would say, but looking at what I've done so far, the idea of role definition that's both theory-based and empirically tested becomes important. That you have an idea and you say why it is and then really empirically test in that specific role. And I think we're seeing more of that coming out in the literature. This role has this level of effectiveness. Some of what I mentioned earlier about what characteristics do we need for community health workers to document effectiveness, something about cost. We can talk about education and career development, but that's probably the area that's had the most attention to it and the most progress that's obviously made in it. But the last piece that's kind of interest to me is this whole idea of population-based empowerment work. This is where what I want to leave you with is that we start to think about bigger pictures. There was a question in the last session about, you know, community health workers focusing on diabetes, and what about the fact that one of their hallmarks has often been that they don't get disease focused but look big picture at what's happening in the community or in someone's lives. And we talked about the fact that the bigger picture you are, the harder it is to measure your effectiveness. But the narrower you are, the more I think the role then becomes just a piece of the healthcare system, and maybe not even our best piece, because that's actually the weakness of the healthcare system, is that we've been so medical model focused for so long. The reason we're not getting the health outcomes and the healthy people that we want is because we're neglecting this empowerment, social determinants of health, what's happening in the community outside the medical care system. And with the National Prevention Strategy and the current administration's focus on moving to a prevention focus, and I said this in the last group, it's not going to happen in my career time that we're really going to change our system to be seriously prevention oriented, but it is going to happen because we're going to bust the country's budget if we don't. If we don't start moving people to that front end and having fewer people get to that more severe end. So it is going to happen, and I think that this is perhaps the time to seriously look at that empowerment issue, that community health worker role, not with specific services, not with specific reimbursement, but really as a part of a team, and that their function is out there organizing and advocating and empowering the community around all of those issues that impact health. And I just want to end with actually would have been my mentor's favorite phrase, is there's nothing so practical as good theory, and maybe we need to start going back to that a little bit. Thank you.